Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking about the culture of philanthropy. Two great guests, Carrie Zeiss, COO of United Way of Greater Portland, and Sarah Ruth Lindquist, CEO of Maine Women's Fund, are going to be our guests today. Thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Well, great. All right. Well, you know, we're going to be talking about something that businesses do but don't always get a lot of credit for. And it's probably one of those topics that we've talked a little bit about in the past, having to do with volunteerism, but we don't talk about building a culture or an organization about understanding why nonprofits are important and why they help the community and why business should be a big part of that. So we're going to start with you, Sarah. Tell us why you think that a culture of philanthropy engagement is good for business, and why it's important for businesses to think that this is a way to really help the community and their employees.
Sure. What we find at the Women's Fund, especially around people who come and volunteer on one of our committees, say in helping us to organize the leadership luncheon or on our finance committee, they get exposed to the work of the fund, which is all about changing the lives of women and girls and really impacting communities in Maine through that half of the population. And it's very inspiring for them, and it's very rewarding for them. And, of course, it's tremendously helpful to us to have their energy and input and ideas. And I think Carrie, I'm sure, would agree with this. It really adds to that high level of engagement that they get to have through their employer and lending their professional voices and their community commitment to the work of organizations that are they're doing things that they're passionate about. So I think it's a wonderful opportunity to do more than just your job. And the companies that are able to involve their employees in organizations like the United Way and the many fantastic nonprofits that they support, and the Women's Fund, which supports lots of fantastic organizations too, is really a good move.
So employers, when they think about, you know, nonprofits, when they think about helping the community, sometimes say, hey, this can cost some money to us. You know, this is a, there's an output to this of some sort. How do you counter that discussion in terms of saying, hey, you know, it's not only a benefit, as you just said, Sarah, to the community? How do you counter the part of, hey, this is a cost to the business, Carrie?
Mm-hmm. So one thing we do know is that companies are increasingly turning towards aligning their own products with their corporate social responsibility goals. And so as employers are aligned with the needs in the community, as employees are engaged in that alignment and can connect to it and touch it, what we find is that there's higher levels of engagement, higher levels of retention and leadership development in the staff in general, and that it actually becomes a good business decision. Increasingly, too, as you know, the labor market changes and millennials are entering in, what we also find is there's a shift in the way that that generation wants to interact with their employers. And they're willing to take different pay structures, for instance. Like what we know is they'll take up to 15% less to work in an organization where they feel like their values are aligned with what the organization is delivering. So there is really a very good business logic case there to be made.
You know, that's true in the sense that when you really listen to the millennials today, they are looking at more than just a job. They're looking at more than just a rate of pay, though there is survey data that says in the last 6 months to a year, pay is becoming more important. It's usually been around 7 or 8 on the list in terms of importance, but due to the economy and due to the other things, we're seeing it around 4 or 5 now. Yeah. But you are correct with the generational shift. There is in the millennials a big, you know, push for this. We'll see if that goes into Gen Z. We'll see if it goes into Gen Z because it's a little more traditional look to Gen Z, or as I like to call them, iGen. All they know is iPhones, iPods, and everything.
Right.
But the reality is that is an interesting shift. Are you seeing the same thing, Sarah?
We are. We are so fortunate to have the participation of people who are definitely millennials. We're also very fortunate to have the participation of people who have concluded their workforce participation. And what's really neat is to be able to see the interaction of those generations and what they learn from each other and how they get energized from each other in the course of their volunteer work. Both groups bring so much to the table in terms of what they can do to support an organization like the Women's Fund or the United Way. It's just an amazing kind of synergy that, I think it'll be interesting to see what the iGen brings to the table. But, what we're seeing now is very vibrant and helpful to everyone. I mean, imagine if all you had to look forward to was 40 hours a week at your desk. The idea that you could be a loaned executive or have these either individual or group opportunities to go and work in an organization doing life-changing work is, to me, a fabulous opportunity as an employee.
I'm going to push on this just a little harder, only because one of the questions that we experience when we're dealing with individuals that are looking for a job in terms mm-hmm. of finding and hiring is that CFOs look at only really one thing, and that's bottom line of organizations, right? And they can certainly say, hey, if we make a donation, it's a tax deduction, there's some other things that go along that's all great. Okay, I get that. But when we're volunteering time and when we're volunteering energy, it sometimes costs money for the organization. Mm-hmm. How do you speak to the C-suite? How do you speak to the organization of, hey, we get it, the employees are engaged, they want to have a great environment, they want to be great for the culture, we want to have some sort of community. I get all that, but as an HR, professional is looking at, making sure this happens, and then bottom line, CFOs, CEOs who want to really make a difference and saying, hey, I'd love to do it, but, I only have so many funds on the table. What do you say to them, Sarah, in terms of, really engaging them to make that happen?
I think a reminder that this is really a very unique opportunity. There's no other way that I know of that an employee can get the kind of infusion of energy and passion than by actually committing time and effort to an organization that's doing work that they care about. It's the intersection of their passions and what they care about deeply, and the fact that they would have an opportunity to participate through their professional life, that I think really says a lot about not only the individual that's willing to do that, but the organization that's willing to allow them to do that. And as Carrie said, really raising the level of retention and job satisfaction that folks are demonstrating when they're allowed to do that.
Carrie?
So we do have some survey data at the United Way that does provide some weight to the argument that it's actually good business to allow your employees to engage in a meaningful way. And so some of the information we have is that when people believe their jobs are meaningful, they actually channel more of their discretionary time into their normal day-to-day work. They choose to make that choice. So for higher complexity jobs, that can relate in an average of 48% improvement in performance measurement and management. And then sales, we see a lift of between 48 and 120%. So if you're working, say, at a company with a large sales force, it actually behooves you to have them connected to the needs of the community and choosing to spend more of their discretionary time working on your opportunities as well.
Yeah, I think that makes a difference when you get facts, right? That's the bottom line when C-suite looks at these things. They say, we got to have the bottom line. We got to understand what that means in terms of our populace. All right, so we're talking about a culture of philanthropy, and we're talking with Carrie Zeiss, United Way COO, and Sarah Ruth Lindquist, CEO of Maine Women's Fund. And we're talking about developing that culture. So let's get into that a little bit. Carrie, what are some of the things that you would say to an HR executive or any executive you're talking to of how to start the process? How do you make this shift if you've never done it before?
So what we start with is finding out what are your goals organizationally, what are you invested in the community, and how does your mission align with where United Way is working in the community in education, financial stability, and health? And from there, what we do is try to offer opportunities for employees to either experience or learn more about what we're offering. and we connect. We basically, part of what we do is we provide fundraising services for other agencies, much in the way that Women's Fund does as well. And so what we want to do is give an opportunity to feel the connection, the vibrancy to that work. So we provide storytelling, social media. We have videos that we use. We bring people in volunteer assignments so that they can experience it.
No, that's great. Sarah, what are some of the things that you tell executives and you tell HR professionals as on how to think about how to start this up? What are some of the processes you might talk about?
Well, my experience in terms of helping organizations build a culture of philanthropy is coincidentally on the nonprofit side, talking with boards and staff about what they need to do in order to build a culture of philanthropy for their own organizations, and that then supports the philanthropy that they are seeking from the community. And keeping in mind that some of our largest employers are nonprofit organizations like hospitals, the colleges, the university system, all of them are dependent upon philanthropy to make their mission possible. So this is a big sector of our workforce. But generally, it's very, very simple. It kind of comes down to me to two activities. One is, whether you're a staff member or a board member at an organization, have you made that organization a priority of your philanthropy? In other words, have you made a gift? And do you regularly make a gift to support its work? Once you've done that, it's much easier to actually suggest to someone else that they should also support it philanthropically, having made your own gift. So that's the first one. And the second one is being able to tell the story of how the organization changes lives, how the organization impacts and benefits the communities in which we all live. Being able to do those two things, know that you've made a gift and feel more comfortable suggesting philanthropic support to the organization from others, and being able to tell the story so that you have a compelling message about the impact of the organization, not just the needs that it has financially, but really what it's doing for the community, so that the question of need isn't even the compelling part of looking for support from the community.
When you're looking for that support, and you know, companies, I'm sure, when I think about it and when I talk to other organizations, they're pretty open to doing this. It's not like it's a hard sell. It's more of a choice between organizations, right? That's where we end up finding. And look, my organization gets called all the time for donations, mm-hmm. and we have one or two that we typically do. And mm-hmm. you could give to 1,000 across the board. So I guess one of the things is maybe I could ask you, Carrie, what you think about how somebody should make that choice. How does somebody choose one over the other? Because, you know, you could argue, is cancer more important than ALS, or what is this? You could go right through the whole thing right. In terms of that. So what are you seeing on that, and what do you talk about from that perspective?
That's a great question. The United Way has historically functioned almost to provide that access point to the full suite of ways that you can support in the community. So we have partners that do function in the areas of education, financial stability, and health. So if your interest is in cancer, you can sign up through United Way Campaign in your organization to have payroll deduction takeout. It's very accessible. So, you know, you can start with whatever feels meaningful for you. It could be $1 a week, $5 a week, $10 a week. But you can choose where you want to support within the portfolio, of agencies that we do provide financial support for. So there's lots of different options. Maine Women's Fund has a similar model as well. So we do feel that it is our mission to educate you about the stories of the nonprofit community. We bring in speakers from agencies. We tell you about the work that we do in the community to deepen educational outcomes, help kids read better, make sure that people have access to pathways for a good life. And that is our responsibility, to make sure that that story resonates for the employee base. And it's one of the things that we can provide.
No, I think that's great, and I think it is a personal choice, isn't it?
It is.
It really becomes a very personal
Absolutely.
Choice in terms of this. Sarah, when you have dialogues with employers, which I know you do, and you're talking to especially to the board, maybe the board level in terms of what they're looking to do, what are some of the things that you hear that maybe you have to overcome as challenges?
Well, some of the things you've already referred to, and that is sort of the philanthropy fatigue and feeling overwhelmed with all of the choices that are out there. And I know from my own participation on the board of the Maine Philanthropy Center, which is the association of both corporate and foundation grant makers in the state. One of the things that the corporate foundation, the corporate philanthropy folks really can't ignore is what organization has so much visibility that we should really consider being involved because of the amount of visibility it's going to give to our organization. And that's, I think, a very legitimate business decision on the part of corporate philanthropy because they, in the for-profit world, obviously have to answer to their shareholders. So I completely understand that. And, when I would talk with organizations that are trying to figure out how to approach corporate philanthropy, I would say, you do want to be able to have that compelling story. You want them to understand the impact of the work that you do, but you also have to be able to show them where they're going to be seen as your supporter in various kinds of media and whatever part of the state you are in and what sectors of the population, what the demographics are. It's almost like you're making a marketing pitch. But obviously, it's not a marketing pitch. But for many corporate philanthropy departments, it really is. So I think we can't ignore that part, too. And sometimes I think the ability to show a really strategically focused and strategically effective means of reaching a demography is compelling for corporate philanthropy.
You're absolutely right. I think there is a balance that has to be struck between that. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan?
I like bronze, like my tan.
Are sunburns covered?
Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group.
Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional.
Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're having a great discussion about culture of philanthropy. And we're talking with Carrie Zeiss, COO of the United Way of Greater Portland, and Sarah Lindquist, CEO of Maine's Women's Fund. Great organizations, by the way, both of you.
Thank
great,
you.
Great stuff.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to have you on the show today. And I have to do a throw out just because Broadreach Communication here in Portland put us all together. So I'm going to give them a little plug because, you know, without them, we wouldn't have probably connected, right?
That's right.
So that's
yes.
a good thing.
That's right.
That's a good thing. All right. So we talked about in the last segment a little bit about why it's important and why companies think about doing this, and talked a little bit about how, you know, the starting process, if you want to call it. I'd like to get into a little bit of a couple examples, if we could, of maybe success stories in terms of each one of your organizations and how an organization made this happen. We'll then probably in the third segment talk a little bit more the individual and how it can be helped that way. But I'd like to stay on the corporate side for a few minutes here. So let's start with you, Sarah, if we could. We're going to talk a little bit about, tell me an example of how Maine Women's Fund has partnered with an organization. So go ahead.
We have developed relationships with lots of corporate and business partners over the years in relation to an annual event that we have that's known as the Leadership Luncheon. And the Leadership Luncheon is a fabulously successful event every year, in large part due to that corporate involvement. And one great example that I can give is one of our lead sponsors recently was a local law firm, Pierce Atwood. And Pierce Atwood has several of their attorneys on our committees, which is great for development and for luncheon planning. And they host many of our meetings in town because they have very comfortable, lovely office space that they graciously allow us to use. But they also one year decided, well, we want to do a sponsorship at a higher level. We'd like to do some of that in kind instead of just in cash. Could we print your program in our in-house printing facility? And it worked out fabulously, and it was a great opportunity for them to bump their sponsorship level up, but a great opportunity for us to have a really fabulous program for the luncheon that day. And this is an event that this past year drew 700 together at the Holiday Inn by the Bay for a couple hours of listening to very inspiring stories about the work of the fund. So they have volunteers from their work staff, they host our meetings, they are a sponsor for the luncheon, and we've just really been so fortunate to have their participation and their support increase over the years. And in fact, this past year with those kinds of partnerships, we saw a record, I think, $72,000 in revenue from corporate sponsorships at the luncheon.
No, that's great. And I think that's a great example of how simple, small, incremental change can make a difference in not only the corporate world, but also in the nonprofit world, right? And the partnership that's between the two. Carrie, give me an example from your organization of what you see, you know, in the area or, you know, in New England. That's a real good success story.
Okay. So on our community impact side, we have a project called the Westbrook Children's Project, which brings together many nonprofits, government agencies, and corporate partners to effect some real change in educational outcomes for children in that school system. And what we've done is make a real impact by aligning our own grant making, so where we're giving money in the community, with corporate volunteering efforts, advocacy efforts, and creating a strong network where things are beginning to move, particularly in the early ages for reading. So specifically, we have one tactic that we use to make sure that kids are ready to read in school, and we call this the Literacy Kit. The Literacy Kit is a series of games, it's letter forms, and it's instructional materials that are provided for children entering kindergarten so that they're actually ready to read on grade level when they get to third grade. What we have done is we have corporate partners that have deep corporate commitments to philanthropy. So one of them, for instance, is TD Bank locally. What they have done for us is they've actually sponsored the creation of the Lit Kits. They then bring teams to the office. They put them together so that their teams have an opportunity to experience team building together. So they work together on a project that might be different from the way they work in the office normally. They have hands-on opportunities to create something which has an educational outcome, and then they deliver it to the children. So we've seen that's just one very small example of how we take a corporate partner that has a real culture of volunteerism and service and actually make it applicable, vibrant, and live for their employees in a way that supports their goals as well.
No, I like that because it also includes the leadership element of it, yeah. Right? The team building part.
Exactly.
And a lot of organizations are talking about team building. You know, we're seeing for the first time in probably 4 years, development of team building is up.
Right.
You know, and that's obviously a little bit of the turn of the economy, though Maine, as I like to say, is a little bit behind. It's just how it is. We don't see the high highs. We don't see the low lows, but we also just don't see the robust boom. But we are seeing that as a return. So that's great. When we're talking about organizations setting this up, how difficult is it to set up, Carrie? I mean, how difficult it is for a company to say, okay, we're going to do it, now what?
Yeah, it can be actually very easy. So we have several ways that we start to engage employees. One of the big things that we do is a day of caring. So we do that every single May. We bring in thousands of volunteers to work on projects throughout the community. So nonprofits come and say, you know, we need a beach cleanup or we need a painting project done at a community center. And we provide all of the logistics coordination for that one big day of service that culminates in a sense that we moved significantly the needs of the community forward. So that is one way very easily someone picks up the phone, they talk to our volunteer department, and we can make that happen. Usually what happens is through that engagement, then we find that people want to do more and more with us. Then we have the opportunity to step up to deeper levels of service within our organization and transfer that to giving.
Sarah, are you seeing the same thing? Is it that simple? Is it just as easy to say, hey, pick up the phone, call us, we'll make it work?
No, I think for organizations like the United Way of Greater Portland and the Maine Women's Fund, it really can be if you're calling people who are passionate about, in the case of United Way, you know, providing healthy communities and supporting children, and in our case, people who are particularly interested in the economic security of women and girls. If you've got a receptive audience, then having the opportunity to engage really does provide that meaningful part that then supports the idea of philanthropy and actually giving of your own financial resources to support the organization.
When you're looking at an organization and saying, yep, we'll take some assistance from you, are there ever times that you say, well, maybe we won't? Carrie? Oh, Sarah's laughing, so maybe I should direct that.
It's a great question. There's certainly been a lot in the news about this lately.
That's right. That's one of the reasons I brought this up.
Yeah, and I think that there is certainly a balancing act for organizations, and of course their boards are going to decide, because it's a critical policy issue for a board of directors to say, can we live with the, you know, can we live with the taint of this money? Does this reflect badly on what we do? And then there are boards that say, you know, it doesn't, if we are doing good work with money that might not come from the most desirable sources. But I think it's every organization's, you know, it's every organization's responsibility to decide what they can live with. I know lots of buildings had names associated with Bernie Madoff, and they don't have them anymore. I know some gifts were returned, some not voluntarily. But, you know, there are lots of reasons to think that through and decide whether it is worth it to do, to accept a gift and then do good work with it, or just decide you're not going to deal with it at all.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is sometimes you get lumped in with the company you keep, right? And so we talk a lot about that on social media. You know, if you link with people who are not necessarily posting the right things on your site and you suddenly have stuff that's up there, people can, you know, relate to that and go, I wonder if that's really something. So, Carrie, any thoughts or anything on that? Or,
well, I think, you know, we have made decisions not to accept certain sponsorships if they don't align with our mission. So, you know, for instance, just given our focus on, you know, particularly education, we would be careful around who we align with the funding activities, those volunteer activities. That's just something that would be part of our normal operating structure. Just because it does matter that there is alignment, and we find that there is such generosity, particularly in this community that does provide support, we're able to, you know, find other venues for those sponsorships and put them in a place where it might be a better match.
Yeah, you know, I understand. And the reason I bring this up, obviously, is the fact that it's been a lot in the news, and there's a lot of questions about nonprofit and where the money goes and what it's all about. So just as a quick reference, I think it's important to say right at this point, could you, Carrie, give me an overview of the United Way? I mean, let's have a little overview about what it is, and then Sarah Certain will talk about the Maine Women's Fund right after that. But I'd like to have the audience understand what exactly, if they go, I know what the United Way is.
Right.
Kind of, do I?
Right. So the United Way, you know, there are 1,200 United Ways in the United States, and we are all independently owned, but we are organized as a system. And we do a workforce fundraising campaign, which is our traditional source of revenue, where we, on an annual basis, go in and we tell you about the nonprofits that are working in your community and what we're doing to move the common good. And offer payroll deduction, individual, you know, gifts that can be made all at once, stock gifts. But do this on an annual basis. We then bring the money in, and then we have a process which uses volunteers in the community. So we have volunteers who sit on our community impact teams, and they evaluate programs and education, financial stability, and health, and make funding decisions. So we have really great oversight and transparency. Our funding decisions are really guided by community members who are actively analyzing the results of these nonprofits. So we look at balance sheets. We look at how funding is done. We look at governance structures. So there's pretty good systems in place to make sure that funds that are coming in are going to their greatest impact in the community.
No, that's great. Sarah?
Well, the Maine Women's Fund started in 1989 when a group of women realized that many parts of the country were creating these philanthropic resources to support economic security for women and girls, and Maine didn't have one. So they started one, and since then, the fund has made about $1.8 million in grants to about 180 organizations around the state, and these are programs like Women Work in Community, Women Unlimited, Hardy Girls Healthy Women, Girls on the Run, organizations that are helping girls and women learn what they need to learn, be exposed to the opportunities that they need to be exposed to in order to have the ability to care for themselves and their families.
No, that's great. And I think it's just important for people to know, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what it's all about and what this is, you know, what we're talking about here today really does make a difference in the community and in the overall. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We are on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan?
I like bronze, like my tan.
Are sunburns covered?
Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group.
Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. Sheehan Finney Bass and Green, innovative approaches and practical solutions. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. Today we're having a great discussion on the culture of philanthropy. We're talking about nonprofits. We're talking about having your organization take the time, energy, money, support, volunteerism to make it happen in your community. And to do that, we're talking with two great guests, Sarah Ruth Lindquist, CEO of Maine Women's Fund, and Carrie Zeiss, COO of United Way of Greater Portland. And again, I really appreciate you both being on the show today. You know, we've talked a lot about the corporate side, right? The corporate connection to the community, the marketing aspect of it, which is absolutely legitimate. The discussion with the boards, the discussion with the CFO, the discussion with the HR professionals, the ease of getting it into your organization and making it happen. So what I'd like to do now is kind of talk about what's the real benefit to the individual themselves. And I'll immediately say that the obvious benefit is the fact that it is, you know, that they are participating in the value in doing so and the feel-good part. But let's get past that a little bit because that's the obvious stuff. What is the real value to an individual to do this through their organization or their company? And what do you think that means to them? Carrie?
So as someone becomes more deeply ingrained with the work that we do at the United Way, they have the opportunity to serve in many different venues. One of them is that, you know, through board service or committee service, they actually develop their own network with a high-achieving professionals in the in the community in general. And they have the opportunity to raise to board service. We have been profiling, actually, many of the different faces and voices in, that help our organization from our corporate partners over this past year. We call it the Greater Portland is My United Way campaign. Specifically, you know, we have one corporate volunteer who talks about what mentoring did for him over time, the value that he provided to the children that he mentored, helping them achieve greater academic success and what it did for his personal career. We have someone who tells the story of their Day of Caring history and how being involved in the community over years and seeing that impact has furthered his own personal ambitions. So what we find is that as someone becomes more deeply involved in the work, they become passionate advocates for the community and they give even more of themselves. They become connectors and they become more deeply woven into the fabric of the community.
You know, and I think that's the connection, right, between a company and, you know, I know there's a lot of discussion in the world today about company is, you know, is it really an entity? In fact, it's a bunch of people that band right. together and that just make things happen. That's no different than, you know, a nonprofit, which also is a bunch of people that band together to make things happen.
Right.
There's just a different goal in mind between both. But it is for the better or the common good in this particular case. Right. Sarah, what do you see in this aspect in terms of individual value to the organization and to themselves?
I have a tremendous amount of respect for the impact in terms of personal satisfaction and the real sort of character building and adding to the meaning of one's life that somebody gets from making a difference by being involved as a volunteer. And I'm also, as a legal and financial advisor, very aware of the, I wouldn't say enticement because it isn't a primary motivator, but it's kind of like the icing on the cake that a tax deduction provides for gifts for itemizers, people who itemize their deductions for taxes. And also, when I work with people on planning their estates and creating a philanthropic legacy, I get to see how people are able to find that intersection between what they have done in their lifetime in terms of earning and building a level of wealth, and the intersection with their passions for the community and how they can create very significant gifts that will, in some cases, in perpetuity, benefit the community for generations to come. And that is a very profound and meaningful way in which philanthropy can serve individuals who really have a dedication, have that charitable intent, and want to make a difference for the long term.
And it doesn't have to be millions, right? I mean, I think there's a little bit of a misconception maybe of the word philanthropy,
absolutely,
right? Because when people think of, you know, philanthropists, ooh, you know, multi-millionaire or billionaire or, you know, people with an awful lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that's really not what we're talking about today, though I'm sure that if they came by, you would say hello and welcome them in with open arms. But we're not necessarily talking about that today.
Right.
We're talking about average Joe, average Jane, who are on, you know, doing their job, making 30, 40, 50K. So, you know, Carrie, talk about that a little.
Yeah. So, I mean, no matter where you are on the income spectrum, we know that people are committed and generous and they want to make a contribution. They want to support in whatever way that they can. And we have people who regularly give, you know, donations up, you know, $1 a week. Right. So here in United Way in Greater Portland, we raise $7.7 million annually to go back into the community. And we do that with 16,000 donors. So there are some major donors in that mix. There are a lot of very loyal, longtime donors who give gifts which would be much, much smaller than that, but are still part of the, you know, we value them, treasure them, and are thankful for their contribution because it all matters. We can't do this. We can't make the change that needs to happen in the community without everybody on board, no matter if you're supporting financially, if you're using your voice to advocate, or if you're volunteering your time and efforts. All of them are important to making that change.
And Sarah, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about one of the matching gift programs that are out there. This is one example, right, of something that companies and individuals can use together to build upon the smaller donations and make it even larger than it appeared originally.
Exactly, and I'm so glad you mentioned it, because just as Carrie was saying that, I was thinking about how companies that do offer matching gift programs really incentivize at such a fantastic level in such a great way the giving of the employees that they have. And what a great opportunity for someone to say, you know, I can give you $1 a week, but my employer will match it dollar for dollar, so I'm really able to leverage 100% of my giving through my employer and double what the organization receives. And I think that's got to feel pretty good. And here you're building a stronger relationship between the employer and the employee by providing that kind of support and synergy for the organization and the individual. So I think matching programs, we certainly see them used very often with employers around Maine and our donor population, and I'm sure the United Way does as well.
Absolutely. Yes, we do.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things, Carrie, you brought up were all the different ways people can spend their time or donate, or not,
yes,
just cash.
Right.
So give a little overview again, because I think that's important, because sometimes people just think of, you know, this as, you know, well, I even have to give my time or money.
Right.
And it's not just that,
right,
is it? Right,
right. So we talk about giving, advocating, and volunteering as being three of the activities that we actively engage with people on. And, you know, charitable giving is the most obvious in being in this sector. But what's equally as important is advocating. So raising your voice, liking something on social media, participating in an important tweet conversation around a political issue that could have impact in people's lives is just as important as a way to interact and move the needle on those social concerns. And volunteering, and it could be board service, it could be making a literacy kit, it could be a beach cleanup. Any contribution of time is helpful and important and necessary.
And Sarah, you would agree, I'm sure. Any additional information you'd like to give with that?
Well, I think that, you know, in Maine, we have such a large number of nonprofit organizations that help make life in Maine better for a lot of people, especially those who are disadvantaged or in terms of in protecting the environment or promoting the arts and creating access to education and healthcare. We are therefore in need of the volunteers at the highest level in terms of board service. And so there are great opportunities for people to get involved in leadership and really help make sure that these organizations have the best in terms of their financial stability and their policy for, you know, for as long as it takes to address whatever societal need they are trying to address. And so because of that large number of nonprofit organizations, there are so many great opportunities because every organization needs not just the volunteers, like the ones that we involve on our committees and that the United Way gets involved, but also in that leadership role at the board level.
That's really good information, and I think that it critically completes the discussion between corporate and individual and the connection between the organizations. You know, I think it's important to talk about some upcoming events. It's here in September. It's a good time to talk about some of the things that are happening. Let's start with you, Carrie. What events are happening right now or coming up in the near future?
Well, we're currently deep in our annual fundraising campaign. So from September through December, we're raising funds in organizations, but you can also give individually. If you'd like to connect with us or see some stories about our impact at unitedwaygp.org. This is the time when we do everything we can to raise that money for next year.
No, that's great. Sarah, what events are coming up? I know you have a big annual event next year. I know you want to get the date out on that, but anything locally happening first? And then let's talk about the big event.
Sure. If folks are interested in learning about the Women's Fund or hearing from us monthly, we have an e-news that you can sign up for at www.mainewomensfund.org. And our annual event is May 19th in Portland at the Holiday Inn by the Bay, and tickets will be available for that on the website as well. And that we start planning for very soon. So we're looking forward to that, and we expect it will be another sellout event.
When you're talking about events, how big are events in the importance to the organization, Sarah?
For our organization, it is it generates approximately one-third to one-fourth of our annual revenue, and it is a key community engagement opportunity where stories are shared about the great work that's going on around the state.
And for the United Way, this fundraising event from September to December.
Right. So it's an annual campaign, not an event per se. We do have events that are supportive, but the events themselves don't drive our revenue. Our events are opportunities for people to touch and experience the mission and learn more about our community needs. So the campaign is somewhat separate.
You know, I'll just throw out there, you know, a lot of people like to give at the holiday times. That's what we're going to be coming up.
Absolutely.
Here. You know, I was just looking on. There's something like seven more Saturdays to Christmas or something in September. I mean, it's just that scares me anyways when you start talking that. But the reality is there's not a lot of time, and gift giving has changed over the years and thinking about donations. So where can they go, you know, Carrie, in terms of if they're thinking about donations or gifts like that?
Absolutely. So they could go to our website, UnitedWayGP.org, to give individually. In November, we also have a Family Day of Caring activity. So people, if they're getting ready for Giving Tuesday, which comes shortly after that, want to get together and make gifts to be delivered to people who are having Meals on Wheels delivered for Thanksgiving, they can.
Great. And Sarah?
Well, we love to have people use our website for gift giving. And one of the things that we promote, in addition to Giving Tuesday in December, is to honor a woman in your life through a gift as a way of really recognizing what they have meant to you. And that can be done through our website as well.
No, that's great. I'm sure my wife would appreciate that. So we'll just leave it at that. No, and by the way, everybody can go to the HR Power Hour website after the show, and we will have the information here as well as a recap of this entire conversation. You also have the websites and the contact information for the guests here today. Again, I want to thank Carrie and Sarah for being on the show today.
Thank you. This
was a fantastic discussion about the culture of philanthropy and really making it happen in your organization. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB, and we will be right back with the HR Tip of the Week.
All right, I was close.
You're close.
You were close. No, that was fine.
Was that fine? Okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Wow.
I was only 14 seconds over.
Wow.
Sarah, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, David. It was a lot of fun, and Carrie did a great job.
Thank you, Sarah.
And do we know the air date?
Oh, yeah. It's September 13th.
9:13, and that's 10 a.m.?
10 a.m. And what will happen is, of course, we do an e-blast that goes out the Thursday prior with everybody's information, and we'll send you that so you can market it out, social media and all that. Hopefully you'll get on the list shortly of the HR Power Hour, and you'll get them each week. A week before that, you'll see next week on. It's just a little blurb. So we do that each week, and we certainly encourage you to send it out. We don't charge to be on the show. We're simply trying to build our audience at this point, so that's what we're trying to do. So thanks for both being on the show.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
All right, have a great day. And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. According to trendhr.com, causes of off-the-clock claims having to do with wage and hour issues stem from paying shift time incorrectly, failing to capture pre- and post-work, for example, booting up time, pre-shift meeting time, etc., automatic deductions from unpaid meal breaks, exception time reporting, paper timesheets, or inconsistent time and payroll records. This can be very costly to you and your organization. And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we have two great guests. First, Jonathan Kent, VP of Enrollment Management at Thomas College, discusses the new partnership between Jobs of Maine's grads and Thomas College and how employers can get involved. Then Jim Edholm, president of BBI Benefits, discusses his new ebook, An End Run Around Obamacare, Minimizing the Cost of ACA Compliance via Partial Self-Funding. So that's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.